And we're all set. Hi, thanks so much.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure how much I'll have to give you, but I'd be happy to talk to you. Where are you located?
So I'm based in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was inspired to do this project because of my own mother and her involvement in this work. And I just really think it's important to hear and remember all of this great information about folks who have been part of this work before us. So thanks so much for taking time to talk to me.
Sure, happy to do it.
So I guess I'd just like to ask, maybe if you could just tell us your name and how you first got involved in sort of civil rights and anti-racist work and organizing, and what did that look like for you?
Okay. I'm Marcia Taloff. And I got started in activism generally back in college with the Vietnam War protesting. And so that's how I sort of got into a group of people who were generally activists in a lot of different areas. But as I went back to think about it, I realized that a lot of the early stuff, they were really, some of it was siloed off. Not the way it is today, where sort of if you're a liberal activist, you're sort of liberal in a lot of areas. The Vietnam War protests, when we would go to those protests, whenever someone would speak for gay rights or for women's rights, there would be very little interest in sort of a lot of talking and maybe mockery, because most of these groups were run by white men at that time.
Interesting.
And so as I think back, you know, I was able to do things, but most of them were run by white men, and they weren't always, you know, interested in the other areas where people were having problems. So, I got involved in a group at college because of the Vietnam War, and then got interested in other areas. And so I had some friends that we decided after college to go, and we had seen an advertisement for this group down in Virginia, Lunenburg, Virginia, that they were doing voter registration. So this would have been in 71 or 72.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird because when you sent me this, I thought, well, let me look up and see this guy that we were down there with. I wonder if his name would come up. And it did. And he died a few years after, which I've never looked on the internet for him, because back then you didn't.
Yeah.
But we did voter registration for him, but not for very long. It was, how to say this, it's an example of what I was just saying, that being liberal in one area did not make you liberal in another area. And
yeah.
I lived with him, and he was very, very chauvinistic.
Yeah.
And he would sit there and say, whatever, I can't remember his wife's name, I think it was Feeney, shave me. And she would come with a razor and shave him. And it was, I mean, he was very much in control of the household and his wife. And it was very much he was the boss, and women were, he worked with me. We went around, and I drove, and we would go to different houses to try and get people to register or take them to register. And one time he picked the wrong house because he thought he knew who lived there, and they didn't. And the guy came out with a gun. They weren't interested in seeing a white woman and a black man riding around in a car together at that time.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was, I don't know, as I look back on it, I probably see different things than I did at the time, but it was very interesting work. And then,
primarily registering, trying to register African-American people?
Yes,
vote?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
it.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah.
Because he knew who lived where, and except the time he made a mistake, but we would go in and talk to them and try and get them to go and take them to
what
register.
What did you all do when the guy came out with the gun?
We just got out of there.
We
just left.
And what,
and
was
he didn't follow us.
Groups, or was he part of?
Yes, as I look back, there's a There's a little heritage sign on the highway that they've put up recently about him.
Oh,
that
wow.
He was involved with, I think it was called even at that time, Virginia Students for something for voter registration. But all it was him. And there were the three of us that came down together. At that point, that's who was there. And I assume over the years there were different people. But it wasn't, you know, this big group of people. He would just, whoever he could get to come down, we'd get paid. I think we got paid $8 a week. And then we, you know, had a place to stay and food to eat.
Yeah.
And it's funny to look back at what they were saying. And, you know, I didn't know a whole lot about him. I knew he was very focused on this one thing and was devoting his life to it, but I didn't know the other things that had gone on. He had had a march before we came down for students for voter registration. And so it was interesting to look at that and see that this was a bigger part. But when we were down there, we thought, you know, this is just some little thing we were doing.
Was it rural Virginia?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was rural. Very rural.
Got it.
Fairly near Lynchburg.
Wow.
Fairly near Lynchburg that, you know, that name, I think, came.
Yeah.
Not good things. So we stayed for a while, but it was an uncomfortable situation just because of the things I've described. So then I went to work for the United Farm Workers.
Oh, yeah.
Who were mostly at that time black in parts of the country and Hispanic out in California and Texas. So I worked in Cleveland and in Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, we had a house that the farm workers rented for us. And I think maybe six of us stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then we got paid $8 an hour. I mean, $8 a week and plus our food and and the place to stay. And we did a lot of going to groceries and doing picketing on the weekends in particular, at first about grapes, and then the wine boycott came in, and so we would go up to Princeton and do, because they had a lot more fancy wines up there, and we would picket the wine stores up there. So we did a lot of picketing both in Cleveland and in Philadelphia, and that was difficult for me because I'm an attorney, but I'm not really one that wants to be out there while people are yelling at you and saying things to you. So I never really enjoyed that, but we did a lot of it. And
I was gonna ask sort of what were some of the most difficult aspects of doing some of this work. Would you think is that one or?
Yeah, that's one of it. It is that that people are mad at you a lot, and I don't know. I mean, today I don't know if it depends on where you are. Then people were mad at us generally because we were just in their way and they didn't understand the farm workers movement. But as I was thinking about it just in the last hour since you sent me this, one of the most difficult things was that you were isolated because, like in Philadelphia, it was the six of us living in this house and everything was focused on doing this job. And
yeah.
You didn't have money to do anything else. And at the time, you didn't think about it because you were very focused, but you sort of became this true believer that didn't have a life outside of it. And I think that was true down in the voter registration. I mean, you're living with the person that's doing it, and you don't have any life outside of that. And you don't have other people. I mean, he wasn't out talking to other people. I mean, we were going and talking for a specific thing. And I think you enter this, you know, just very isolated situation, which I don't think people today would do as much. But then, because we were living and working together, and it was sort of this, it was very isolating.
Yeah, I'm curious. I wonder if there are people today who do projects that put them in a similar place. Like what you're saying is, you know, a lot of it depends on where you might have to go. And I imagine maybe was there relationships at least between the six people in the house?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had good relationships. And so, I mean, that was good. And at the time, you don't think of it, but my friends outside would say, you know, you really, you know, I wouldn't get to see them. And I think they would have said to me, hey, you're what we would call a true, you're getting to be a true believer, which we were saying not in a good way, but in this hyper-focused way that you just couldn't see things outside of it. So, and I don't think that would happen so much today because I don't think I think most people who do it today are doing it out of their own homes and their own lives rather than in this, you know, live-in environment that we did. But I can't tell you that. But
yeah.
But as I was thinking about it, that was one of the things looking back that was probably, I only did this for a couple of years, these things. And I don't think I could have done it for much longer because of that hyper-focus thing.
What would you say were the, I guess, most rewarding parts of the work?
Well, I mean, you wanted to get up each day and go out and do something. You felt like you were, you know, doing something for people. You know, we were aware of the horrible conditions at that time for the farm workers with pesticides and being sprayed in the fields. And we got to meet Cesar Chavez.
I got
to meet him a couple times. And, I mean, you know,
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And you felt like you were doing something because the conditions were so awful. And so, you know, you felt good about what you were doing. And a lot of what I'm telling you is from looking back 50 years as opposed to what was happening then, because it was a good experience. But I don't think it was particularly a healthy experience as a human being.
Did people understand kind of a connection between some of the farm workers' rights and some of this racial justice work of registering people to vote? Did people see that there was like a racial element to the farm workers?
Oh, yeah, I think so, because the people I worked with were the people who came from some of the people who ran these groups were farm workers themselves, so they were black and Hispanic so the farm workers probably understood it more than say the voter registration. He was just hyper focused on that one thing, but the farm workers, but you still were in pretty much of a silo about what you were doing. And like I said, all of these things, you know, gay rights were certainly not anything that was going to come up in any of this. And women's rights were not, I think the farm workers later, you know, it became, the women had a bigger role to play. But, and in the anti-war movement, which is, like I said, where I started, those things didn't have any role to play. So I think today people connect those things a lot more with all of those civil rights and understand that they're, you know, connected. But back then, I think people had passions that were maybe a little narrower.
I see. Yeah.
Now, not everybody, of course. I mean, you know, that's not true. But the situations I was in, it was a narrow focus.
And what was kind of the biggest lesson you had to learn in that time in order to be able to do this work and keep on going?
Well, I think the hardest thing at the time was the fact that you were isolated from, not in the sense I was telling before, but that people didn't like you for what you were doing. So
yeah,
that was sort of hard because,
that was other white people.
Yeah.
With the voter registration or was it related to the...
Related to the farm workers, which I consider to be a civil rights issue also. But all of those things, you were, that's not to say everybody hated you, but you were disliked by a lot of people. And if you generally, you know, try to be liked, then it's sort of harder. And some people that might not bother too much, but it did bother me.
But how would you sort of cope with it?
I don't know. I guess you just did it. Like the picketing. I really hated picketing, but we just did it, and we didn't do it every day. We did it on the weekend, and so yeah.
Yeah.
You just did it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was just part of what you were doing, and it was a part that you didn't like, but just like in life, there's parts of things you do that you like and parts you don't like. So.
Yeah. Well, I guess this has been really great. I did want to follow up with one thing, which was, what was it that sort of called you to do this work, and particularly the voter registration in the first place? What was sort of your internal drive for that?
As I look back, I'm trying to remember. I mean, like I said, all of it started through this group that formed. It's at a small college, and it was a small group that formed. So, again, we were sort of isolated from the world. But the Kent State, I was a senior when the Kent State happened. And so that was the thing about the war. And then once you got into
Were you at Kent State?
No, I was in Ohio. No, I was in Pennsylvania, but we were close.
Okay.
But no, I wasn't there. But that happening at the time that we were protesting, at the time, you're a stupid kid, but you're thinking, somebody might shoot us. I mean, this is and I wasn't afraid, but it was just, well, this is what might happen. It's sort of like, because you're a dumb kid. But that being with that group and then forming other interests with that group, because there were several, professors who were older and smarter, and, that sort of led us to try and find find where else you could do some good. And we just found this voter registration thing. I don't know where. It wouldn't have been on the Internet at that time, but I don't remember how we found it even. But we just picked up and went down. And
And I guess the final question I had for the interview was, what advice would you give young people today, and in particular young white women who want to engage in any kind of anti-racist and civil rights organizing and work?
I guess just to make sure that you listen to the people that you're trying to help, and don't try to tell anybody what to do, but listen and make sure that you are not jumping in there and just trying to tell people what to do, but that you are listening and just being a part of something rather than, I don't know how I'm trying to say it, but right now, as a lawyer, we try to do community lawyering, and the hardest thing for lawyers to do is not tell people in the community what they need, but to listen to what the people are telling you. So,
Could you just explain a little of what community lawyering is? I'm familiar with it, but I think if folks listen to the interview, it might help.
Oh, okay. Well, in community lawyering, you're getting involved with community organizations, with community groups, and if you're already involved with the group, they might come to you and say, here's the problem we have in our community. We don't have any groceries in this community. We've just got the bodegas on the corners, and they're all really expensive, and then because they've told you what they need, you try to work with them, not again telling them what to do, but work with them, work with the community. Those folks in the community do most of the work, but you're doing the legal work to say, okay, here's what we could do legally, but you're not trying to drive the situation. You are responding to what they need and using the skills that you have to help them get what they need.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
And maybe just in closing, could you just let people know a little of what you do now in your work?
Well, I work at the Legal Aid Society of Columbus, and this is where my whole legal career has been, and I'm basically doing administrative work now. I'm in charge of our intake system.
Mm-hmm.
So I never thought I would be, but I do a lot of technology-related stuff. But we're on the front line to get clients in and to make sure that we treat them with dignity when they call, and we can't help them because we're having to turn away two-thirds to three-fourths of the people who call us. And so we make sure that everyone is treated with dignity and that we are watching for problems that are developing, and sort of that we have a big picture of what's going on and what kind of legal issues are out there.
That's great. Well, this has been, I really, really appreciate you taking time to talk to me, Marcia. Thank you so much. And I'll keep you updated as this project progresses. You're actually, I've scheduled a few more after this, but you're my first interview. So Thank you so much. I'll let you know what's next when I create the database for the stories.
Okay, it was nice talking to you.
Yes, you too. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.